Microsoft and Yahoo. Take-Two. Wait, maybe this is three or four.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Renita Jablonski. It's hard to stay up on all the back and forth between Yahoo and Microsoft. But there's no question another chapter in the drama is opening today. Carl Icahn, the billionaire activist investor, says Microsoft is willing to talk about a transaction with Yahoo again under one condition. If Yahoo shareholders elect a new board. Microsoft confirms it is prepared to enter discussions immediately after Yahoo's August shareholder meeting if a new board is in place. General Motors already has a for sale sign on its Hummer brand, and the garage sale at GM could soon include names like Buick, Saturn, and Saab. The Wall Street Journal reports the automaker is thinking about whether to sell or stop production of more of its brands. GM and the others are dealing with the credit crunch and rising prices for raw materials and oil. Those problems are getting attention this week at the G8 summit. Talks got underway today in Japan, but the hopes for the meeting aren't too great. A lot of the leaders are politically weak. President Bush is a lame duck. Nancy Marshall-Genzer has more.
The issues facing this year's G8 summit are daunting. Rising food and energy prices, the credit crunch, and a slowing global economy. The White House hopes the group can reach agreement on aid to Africa and global food and energy security. But even President Bush admits,
it's tough to get consensus.
Georgetown University International Affairs Professor Charles Kupchin says the group is still relevant. It's just
the nature of the problems that they face are particularly gnarly.
The G8 can't magically reduce demand for oil or increase food production, but Reginald Dale of the Center for Strategic and International Studies says the group could be more effective if it expanded its membership.
One of the biggest challenges is to integrate, particularly China, and not rebuff it.
Dale says without rising economies like China and India, the G8 does risk becoming irrelevant. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Maybe hosting the G8 is just what Japan needed. The Nikkei was up nearly 1% today, breaking a 12-day losing streak. The Dow is up 84 points to 11,372. The NASDAQ is up 20 points to 2266. The S&P 500 is up as well, 7 points to 1270. Shares in Europe are higher, too. Taiwan and China have been drawing economically closer for 30 years. This past weekend, the first regular nonstop flights between the two former rivals began. Bill Marcus reports from Shanghai.
1 million Taiwanese live in mainland China. But it's joked that another 500,000 islanders are forever stuck in transit, wasting a whole day switching planes in Hong Kong. That's all history now. This weekend, the first regular weekend flights arrived in Shanghai. Taipei resident Christina Chen and her daughters Jia Jia and Felicia were among the first off the plane.
I want my two girls to have this experience to remember for their whole life.
One Taiwanese owner of a mainland plastics factory says direct flights will make his life a lot easier.
I used to fly from Taipei to Hong Kong, but my factory is in Ningbo, so I had to take another flight from Hong Kong to Ningbo. But this time, I fly from Taipei to Shanghai, and on my way to my factory, I can visit several customers.
5 million people a year are expected to fly the $500 round trip. The mainlanders, expected to visit Taiwan, could be rocket fuel for the island's ailing economy. In Shanghai, I'm Bill Marcus for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by the Medtronic Foundation, partnering with Teach for America to bring math and science teachers to under-resourced public schools. More information at teachforamerica.org. And by Gather.com, where friends keep up with the people, conversations, and moments that matter most. People are talking about the economy at Gather.com.
Imagine being told you can't own a TV unless you make a donation in the next public television fund drive. That's pretty much how it works in the UK. The BBC will publish its annual report tomorrow, showing how it's spent its annual revenue of more than $6 billion. Stephen Beard has more from London.
The BBC has been broadcasting this rather sinister message.
Your town, your street, your home. It's all in our database.
A helicopter hovers. A dog barks. There's a knock on the door. The message? It's a criminal offence to watch TV without buying a licence.
And impossible to hide if you don't. It's all in the database.
The Orwellian tone has infuriated Eamon Butler of the free market think tank, the Adam Smith Institute.
I think it's absolutely outrageous that public authorities should be able to bully the general public by television adverts which suggest that they're all criminals and that they're going to get police helicopters and dogs on them.
It's a fact of life in Britain. If you own a TV, you must buy a licence, currently costing $260 a year. That's how the BBC supports itself. But the licence fee ad has triggered a fresh debate about this system.
If you were to try to invent a really bad way of financing public broadcasting, you'd come up with a licence fee.
Jonathan Miller has waged a long campaign against the licence fee. He says this $6 billion a year subsidy for the BBC is unfair.
It forces people to pay for a service whether they like it or not. It doesn't even matter whether you watch the BBC's programmes. You have to pay it just to own a TV set.
Welcome to The Weakest Link. Many of the nine people in the studio here today could win up to £10,000.
He says that with brainless quiz shows and lots of other populist fare, the BBC shouldn't get a subsidy. But the BBC has its supporters.
It produces some astonishingly good television, some very, very good radio.
Ben Fenton of the Financial Times claims the licence fee is a better way of paying for public broadcasting than the American system of telethons, corporate sponsorship and government funding.
I think that what is produced on the BBC is of markedly higher quality than one gets, I'm sorry to say this, on public service broadcasting in the United States.
Ouch! But at least the American system is voluntary and therefore may prove more durable than the British licence fee. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
In Los Angeles, I'm Renita Jablonski. Thanks for tuning in.
American Public Media.